Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Welcome to the Pro Basketball Talk podcast. I'm Dan Feldman. I'm here with Frank Madden of Locked On Bucks, and we just finished watching Giannis Antetokounmpo in Game 3 of the NBA Finals. 41 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists. The only players ever to do that in the NBA Finals. LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Magic Johnson, Jerry West. I thought Giannis was great in Game 2, even better in Game 3. Not bad for a Robin, huh, Frank?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess Giannis just had to show that he can score 40 points and actually help his team, right? Thankfully, he wasn't hurting his team tonight. After game two, obviously, a lot of the, I think from the Bucks perspective, obviously, the still incredible, right? I mean, you reset it 10 days or whatever. The idea that Giannis is not just having a 40-point game, but doing it in the finals, doing it after, you know, seeing his leg nearly explode in that Hawks series. You kind of try to keep it in perspective, but clearly having it come in a loss is obviously kind of disappointing. It felt like, you know, you wasted an all-time game. So for Giannis to say, don't worry about it, I'll just give you another all-time finals performance, and hopefully my teammates will step up and you know, win a game this time, was pretty remarkable. And obviously, you know, as probably everyone saw, just to say rarefied company, obviously we'd be kind of saying it lightly, just to put up, you know, back-to-back 40 and 10 games. I think only guy other than Shaq to do it in back-to-back, and, you know, just the names of the guys who've done it, period, right? I mean, he's had 3 finals games and he's done this twice now. I mean, joining just whatever it is, you know, LeBron and Elgin Baylor and, you know, whoever else that's escaping, you know, Shaq, right? Just pretty remarkable. And, you know, I had questions about, you know, could Giannis be this type of player at the highest level in a, you know, Eastern Conference Finals, in a Finals, just series after series to get you to the point of actually winning a championship. And obviously still a long ways to go for the Bucks to win a championship, but certainly he's answering those questions pretty emphatically right now. And it's just, you know, I think if you're a basketball fan, just a pretty incredible thing to watch.
I don't want to get into nitpicking right off the bat, but you led right into it. My question was never really, can he do this at the highest levels? It's how much impact could he have at the highest levels in a close game late because of his limitations, right? He's not the typical superstar. He does a lot of things that a typical superstar can't, but he's not that guy who's like a go-to scorer in the half court against a set really good defense who can just go get you a bucket. And I guess I still have those questions. But maybe 4 out of 7 times against any team, he can make the final few minutes, that crunch time, irrelevant because the Bucks are already up 20.
Yeah, and you know, as we've seen, right, when games have gotten close, we know Giannis is going to be more in that kind of role man type spot, and that obviously helps unlock Chris Middleton in particular, but also Jrue Holiday. And you know, I think I'm not going to say that the Bucks have figured out, you know, how to maximize all three of those guys at the same time, because clearly that has been an ongoing challenge throughout the playoffs. And, you know, those guys, those other two guys were great in closing out the Atlanta series, and kind of naturally just makes you wonder, okay, well, why can't they do that more often when Giannis is playing? I mean, it makes perfect sense to me that Brooke Lopez wouldn't be able to do it, because, you know, Brooke basically has to sort of space out a bit to give Giannis the room to really dominate inside. So, you know, those rim running lanes we saw from Brooke Lopez in game 5 against Atlanta, like, well, those are Giannis's spots, you know, on most nights. So that makes sense. But I think with Chris and Jrue, there should be more of a complementary type of relationship. And, you know, we see it certainly with Giannis in the pick and roll at times that they can be very complementary in that regard. But, you know, I think a lot of it for Brooke and Chris is just, I mean, they just have to be able to figure out how to make it work when they're not just getting, you know, 20 to 25 shots. And in the first couple games, obviously, especially Holiday, just really struggled to find that rhythm. But, you know, I think that was obviously the big difference tonight relative to those other nights, is just getting maybe not, you know, A-plus games from those guys, but getting enough and getting very timely scoring from those guys. And, you know, you're right. I mean, Giannis is not just kind of your prototypical clear out, given the ball in crunch time, and, you know, the free throw shooting, which tonight was better and was encouraging. That's obviously part of the story as well. But yeah, I mean, he's not, you know, your typical type of superstar in that regard. He's definitely much more of, you know, a Shaq, than, you know, a LeBron. Right. But, I think sometimes, like, we just let that kind of take away from, you know, really appreciating kind of the grand total of what he's able to do. Because, I mean, the fact that he can do what he does, and he's also just giving you this all-world defense and versatility defensively that allows you to play big, allows you to play small. And, you know, not many of the guys that we kind of aggrandize for being kind of those ISO late game scorers can impact the game defensively the way he does. But, you know, again, I get it. It's part of just sort of the culture of basketball that, unfortunately, maybe sometimes I think takes away from just sort of appreciating what guys are amazing at. And, you know, it is what it is. And until Giannis wins the championship, there's always going to be some corner of the basketball universe kind of questioning it. And let's be honest, even if he wins a championship, like, there's always somebody complaining about something, no matter how many championships somebody wins. So it is what it is. But I think the important thing is, I think Giannis just looks like he's gotten comfortable with who he is and how he should operate with this team. And again, we haven't really seen that in this series yet, because the games just haven't been kind of close enough in the last couple minutes of any games. But I would expect at some point we probably will.
Yeah, I mean, for those reasons, I favor the Suns if there's a close game. Chris Paul is good, especially in those moments. Devin Booker's pretty good in those moments. But the Bucks are pretty good at making it not a close game, even against a team as good as the Suns. Again, I don't know if they can do that 4 out of 7 against this team, but maybe when Giannis is playing like this, and everything came together so well, like you were talking about with Jrue Holiday, with Chris Middleton, I thought this is like the picture perfect, what it looks like when they're playing off Giannis. He can be the focal point. He doesn't need to be the go-to scorer down the stretch to be the best player, to be the main player. It's such a narrow view that, hey, whoever is dominating the ball in the final 2 minutes, that's your best top player. It doesn't have to be that way. This is how it can look with Giannis being in charge like this. One thing I was curious about, I mean, you watch the Bucks even more than I do, and I enjoy watching the Bucks. I see them plenty. To me, it looks like, hey, Giannis was doing everything. He was Euro-stepping. He was spinning. Like, all the moves he didn't quite do in game one. He was effective in game one. He had a good game one for a regular player, not a great game one, not a game one from the MVP level. A lot of what he did was in a straight line. To me, this is looking like, whoa, like, everything is very different all of a sudden with him.
Yeah, it's interesting that the numbers the last two games are so similar, because in game two, we saw him hit a bunch of those kind of step back shots that he's gotten. I wouldn't say, well, definitely not say he's good at them, but he has certainly, you know, periods where he gets comfortable with them. And especially that kind of step through to the middle of the lane where he's kind of gotten it's a very high release. It's a very soft shot. And he's gotten pretty comfortable at those sort of like 10 to 15 foot types of shots. And he had a bunch of, you know, some of them end up being kind of those Dirk, you know, the quote unquote Dirk style step backs. And he hit a bunch of those in game two. Tonight, he really didn't hit anything outside of stuff pretty much like right around the basket area. And I think all 14 of his field goals were in the paint tonight. You know, he had one, you know, kind of end of quarter heave type three. And then he took, you know, kind of a kill shot three. I think it was early in the fourth quarter, you know, where he was getting a little bit greedy. But, you know, this was really just to me a different game in the sense that this was truly just sort of a force of will. I am just going to get to the basket every time. And, you know, Jay Crowder, hey, congratulations that, you know, you and the Heat beat me last year and were able to contain me somewhat last year in the playoffs. But, you know, 1v1, I'm just going to be able to get through you. And especially when DeAndre obviously is out with the foul trouble, which obviously Giannis was a major part of getting him into foul trouble. You know, the Suns just have not really figured out how to show him enough bodies early enough to really impact him and prevent him from, you know, either getting to the rim or being able to get fouled and draw free throws. And, you know, I think we saw early in the game, he started 2 out of 6 tonight. So it's not like he started off, you know, just on fire. You know, I think if you bring that second body helping coming over, you know, once he's, let's say, 8 to 10 feet from the basket, you know, he's gotten good at kind of rising up above it. And the Bucks, you know, we saw, I think, Connaughton and Portis run along the baseline, cut in for layups. You know, I think his teammates have figured out, you know, when the defense comes to help, that's a really good opportunity. And he's got enough vision to be able to get easy layups for his teammates in those types of scenarios. So I'm very curious to see kind of what Monty does to try to slow him down. You know, the offensive rebound stuff, the transition stuff, it's just kind of tough because he's, you know, he's just a force of nature and just very hard to contain in those types of scenarios. But in the half court stuff, I am curious, like, do they just bring kind of early doubles at some point to try to get the ball out of his hands in the post, for instance? Cause I just think back to like the Toronto series a couple years ago, like the Nick Nurse did that a lot, where basically just said like, all right, we're just going to, you know, basically show you an extra body right away to not even let you start your attack. And, you know, they really kind of just forced him to kind of get back on his heels a fair bit. So curious if the Suns try that. Obviously, you double in the half court. Everybody but Giannis tends to be able to shoot threes on the Bucks. So, you know, there are obviously counters to that, but that might at least be one option for the Suns to not let Giannis single-handedly dominate them quite the way they have the last two games. But again, I mean, people have been trying to slow down Giannis for 8 years, right? And if it was easy to do, everybody would do it. But that's what makes him great.
Well, everybody on the Bucks can shoot threes besides yes, Giannis. I think that's what's like separating this team from just being a dominant team is that I don't know if there's anybody who reliably shoots threes on the Bucks, but they can. They've got plenty of players who can. And it's I will say this again: it's such a short series. Can you do it 4 out of 7 times throughout the series? Is really the question. Yeah, it's such a good passer too. You're right; it's not easy to stop him. I do believe it is easier to stop him in a playoff series relatively than in the regular season, because when you can really hone in your defense on him, where he's coming from. You know, that he is going to be your focus. I do think the Suns would be better off sending that help defense more aggressively toward him, getting the ball out of his hands and hoping it's one of those nights where the other Bucks aren't making their threes. I think that's the better strategy, but it's not guaranteed to work because, like you said, they can make them. Giannis is the good passer. Plus, when you get the defense scrambled like that, it frees up more offensive rebound opportunities. Giannis isn't the only player on this team crashing the offensive glass art, especially PJ Tucker. But there are a bunch of guys who can get in there on the Bucks. So that's a problem. There's no easy solution, but I do think, and kind of, I think this is more the lesson of Miami, somewhat Toronto, like you mentioned, though. You can, as you identify Giannis, as you see him coming more, focus in on him a little more. He's a little bit more limited than the typical superstar. And I hate to be just nitpicking in the face of all your optimism, because I definitely am closer to your optimism. I'm just trying a little discussion going here. But I just, you know, he's not the typical superstar, and he is a little bit more limited. He's less limited. He has developed his offense. He does have more moves. He has a little bit more of an in-between game. It's not to say he's limited or bad or anything. I'm just saying a little bit different than the typical superstar.
Yeah, and I thought you know, obviously the 41 points, that's what everyone will focus on. But, you know, maybe the better indicator of how comfortable he was tonight and how the Suns really didn't put him in enough spots to be uncomfortable was the fact that he only had one turnover, right? I mean, he's typically a pretty high turnover player. He gets charges. I think he's been lucky. You know, I think there was one play tonight where I forget who it was. It was Crowder or somebody was, you know, kind of probably should have gotten a charge call and didn't. But, you know, I mean, he gets fouled a ton, right? I think Monty Williams was complaining after the game about the number of free throws that Giannis shot. I mean, that's the problem, right?
No. Monty Williams was very clear that he was not complaining about it before he complained about it.
Gotta avoid that fine, I guess. I guess he was trying to play the technicality game with the NBA league office. But yeah, I mean, look, it's kind of the hard part about sort of gauging Giannis and the way we try to understand him is because I think, you know, when you think back to his sort of arrival in his third year where he, you know, Jason Kidd puts the ball in his hands and he's playing as a point guard. And so there was always this sort of natural feeling of like, well, how does he become LeBron? Right. and he's not LeBron, right? And that's okay, right? He's never going to be LeBron as a playmaker, as, you know, just a guy that is thinking two steps ahead of the offense, right? He's not going to be Chris Paul, you know, but that's okay. It's not, you know, meant to be some big indictment of Giannis as a player. So, yeah, I mean, I think they've, you know, leaned, I mean, you know, I always think back to Zach Lowe, you know, always talking about the number of screens that Giannis sets and how that has, you know, taken on an upward trend in the playoffs and, you know, over the course of the season. And, you know, I mean, bottom line, you know, has he faced the most juggernaut defenses in these playoffs? No, but, you know, he actually had his worst series in the first series. And, you know, I thought the Nets did a pretty good job of compressing the floor, especially when the Bucks just couldn't make threes, right? I mean, they just could not shoot at all. And, you know, kind of making Giannis's life a little more difficult. But, you know, every game he was pretty much 30 and 10, right? I mean, and, you know, we can say in theory it should be easier to contain him, but I mean, his consistency has been probably the most remarkable thing about the playoffs, especially after the first round. He's just, you know, with the exception of, I think, that the blowout win over the Hawks in game two, where he just didn't play enough to score 30. And obviously game one coming back from the injury and the night that he actually got the injury, you know, he's pretty much just mark him down for 30 and 10 every night. And, you know, again, I think there's the tendency to complain about, you know, when he's had games where he shoots a lot of threes, to say, well, he's shooting too many threes, doing this, that. Well, okay. But he's also giving you, you know, literally 30 and 10 on typically good efficiency every night. And, you know, there's still upside a lot of times in those games, maybe not tonight or the previous game, but there's often still upside for him to be better by cutting down on his threes, by making more free throws, making some better decisions. But, you know, again, it's just kind of like, and it's, I don't want to say it's optimism. It's just, you know, appreciating kind of what has actually what has already happened. Right. I don't know that, I don't know if he's going to have another 40 point game in this series. It's incredibly difficult to do against a good defense, but, you know, again, it's just, it's been interesting. It's particularly interesting against the Suns because, I mean, he averaged 40 points a game in the two regular season games against them. And he's now done it twice in the finals as well. And I think obviously the question now is sort of in Monty Williams' court, as we were saying, you know, is there a reticence to throw more bodies at him? Because, you know, is it justified to be afraid of the Bucks' three-point shooting at this point, especially given the way that they've struggled in the playoffs? So, you know, we've got a couple of days for Monty to think about it and try to think of a better plan. But obviously with their lack of size, and with, you know, the concerns always that Ayton is going to get foul trouble if he does try to guard Giannis 1v1, it puts the Suns in kind of a tough spot. But again, I agree with you. I mean, if I'm Monty, I would just throw more bodies at him and sell out on some of those shooters, you know, dare PJ Tucker to shoot wide open threes. And even, you know, the Bucks' other shooters, I would just say, all right, you know what? Like, if Brook Lopez hits a bunch of threes against us, you know, we kind of live with that.
I mean, Ayton over time, over a couple of years, I think has done a really good job guarding
individually,
Giannis one versus one. But then you lose Ayton kind of as that rim protector, as that help defender if he's in that role. And so it's a tough trade-off there because I don't, you know, there were times when the Suns went smaller with Ayton out and not even just the Frank Kaminsky Minnesota, that was the worst of it. And I mean, the Bucks just ate at the rim, right? The Suns, I think more than they need Ayton on Giannis, they need Ayton as that help defender, as that defensive rebounder, as somebody who can be a little more camped out inside. Not that he can't handle Giannis in moments. He's been relatively good at that. I don't know if there's a player in the league, I'd say, who one-on-one over the last couple of years has done a better job on Giannis.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think back to a couple of years ago when the Sixers were one of the teams that really, with Joel Embiid, really put an emphasis on using their center to try to slow down Giannis. And I thought Joel Embiid, you know, you look at it just like the one-on-one matchup between the two of them. Joel has done a really good job against Giannis, and the size is a real challenge. But, you know, the first year they did that, the last two games that the Sixers played Giannis, he had 52 and 45 points. You know, right. It's really hard for big guys to, A, just run up and down the floor with Giannis for, you know, 48 minutes. It's hard to obviously throw him in transition in that way. And I think the other thing too is that Giannis, if you have a guy, like for me, the ideal Giannis defender, you have to be a flopper. you know, like you have to be willing to just basically stand there and try to take charges. And I think with so many of these big guys, I mean, I don't know how many charges DeAndre Ayton has taken this year. I would guess probably not very many. And I think with all these guys, whether it's DeAndre Jordan, whether it's Joel Embiid, you know, I'm trying to think like Andre Drummond, I know has defended him at times in the past. Rudy Gobert, he's tended to just score tons of points against those teams. And I think the upside is that a lot of times you can kind of make the Bucks a little bit stagnant because it's just Giannis going one-on-one. I think the Nets in particular in those big games when Jordan actually was playing in the regular season in those two games, I think the Bucks actually were not playing the way they wanted to because it was like, oh, Giannis getting dared to shoot threes and Giannis trying to, you know, get around this big guy. So I think it's interesting. You know, I think Ayton's kind of playing off him is probably a smart move to try to dare him to shoot jump shots. But, you know, Giannis, I think, was asked about that. I forget. I think it was going into the Nets series or what it was. And he just kind of chuckled and he said, like, oh, yeah, I hate it when they try to guard me one on one. He's sort of smiling because, you know, he loves that challenge. And those guys, if you're not going to flop, that gives Giannis carte blanche to just put his shoulder down and he will, you know, basically be a battering ram. And, you know, when we saw it like in game one, right, like when he's coming back from the injury, he had that one play where he just literally just like went through Ayton for a two-handed dunk on the baseline coming from the left side. And I think, again, you know, your best defender is probably like somebody like DeAndre Ayton, who then can also pick his spots and will just keel over and try to draw charges too. But, you know, again, just finding that type of guy is hard. And as you said, I mean, you know, if Ayton's, you know, doing that, it wears you down. It puts you in potential foul trouble. It takes you out of, you know, your ability to rebound, in which is obviously very important for Ayton, just given his size and the lack thereof for the rest of the Suns. So, you know, I mean, just like there's no kind of easy answer for the Bucks slowing down Chris Paul or Devin Booker, you know, I don't think there's an easy answer for the Suns to slow down Giannis. But obviously what they're doing right now is not working. And I would expect them to have some better luck at some point in the series. But, you know, even tonight with Giannis not being able to really make any of his kind of mid-range stuff, he was just physically too dominant to be able to slow down. So we'll see. I think if you're a Bucks fan, you hope that, you know, he just keeps doing this and gives you, you know, 30, 35, maybe 40 and 10 pretty much every night. But, man, that's hard to do. And again, we still don't even know really where his knee's at, right? I mean, he left this game with 8.5 minutes left and started walking up and down the tunnel. You know, I don't think we have heard, I don't know if that we'll ever know what was really going on with that, but I don't know. I mean, would he be even playing right now in the regular season or would they be resting that knee? Anybody's guess, but obviously he feels good enough to be playing at an extremely high level.
Well, one thing about Ayton that I think works well on Giannis relative to those other centers you talked about, Giannis is so great in transition. Ayton can get up and down the court too. Some of those bigger centers, if that's their assignment and they're trying to pick him up, they're going to have struggles there. That, I'm not saying Ayton has no problem with it, but just relatively a little bit less than some of those other bigs. But on the flip side, you mentioned those regular season meetings. Giannis was so big as part of those, scoring so much against Phoenix. That was one of the reasons why I picked the Suns to win this series. And, you know, I wouldn't have been shocked if the Bucks won it going in, but I felt comfortable picking the Suns because I really didn't think Giannis could be healthy enough to do this, and I thought that was going to be necessary for Milwaukee to have a good chance in this series. I just want to take a little bit of stock now and see how you feel. So here's a baseline number for you. When the team with home court advantage is leading a best-of-seven series 2-1, like the Suns are, they've won the series 87% of the time. So that's just 13% for a team in Milwaukee's shoes. What odds do you give the Bucks of winning this series?
Maybe a little bit higher, but I mean, I remember when they went down 2-0 against Brooklyn, looking up the stat, you know, it was, I think the number for teams that were in the semis or later, basically, it was like 93% of teams up 2-0.
It's 94% overall.
Yeah, so something like that, right? And so I remember seeing that number and just thinking, like, man, I really hope, you know, the team is aware of that number because the odds are bad, right? And I remember tweeting out, like, you know, for anyone in the a series doesn't start until the home team loses a game.
The worst cliche in basketball.
Yeah, like, not so much. That's not, history would say that's not how it goes. So yeah, I mean, going down 2-0, you know, I mean, what you're saying too, I mean, I've said this, you know, on our podcast, like, objectively speaking, there was no way coming into the series that I think you could just like make a kind of like rational case that the Bucks would be favorites given A, no home court advantage, B, Giannis was a big question mark, and C, just Phoenix is just really damn good. And mm-hmm. and granted, I mean, both of these teams have had a lot of luck in terms of opposing, you know, teams' injuries throughout the playoffs. But I think, you know, just Phoenix, just top to bottom, I think are just, they just feel like a safer option. You know, I think just like coaching wise, you just feel better about Monty versus Bud. And, you know, just the role players too, the depth has obviously been reduced a little bit. You know, Torrey Craig did play tonight, so he's at least back, but I think he just felt a little bit better with just the way that they kind of lined up. And, you know, to the point about defense as well, I mean, I definitely also felt like, man, you know, Ayton plus Jay Crowder, that's a better kind of combination of potential like big and small defenders on Giannis than he's really faced in any of the playoff series so far. But shows you what that's worth, right?
Right? I mean, sure.
You know, just hasn't mattered so far. And again, I'm a little surprised. And again, I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm an X's and O's genius. I don't know why, you know, the Suns haven't been able to, you know, sort of figure that out a little bit better, why they've been maybe more unwilling to sell out on Giannis than, like, for instance, the Nets were. But, you know, so far that's kind of what's happened. And I think it's obviously still very long odds for the Bucks to come back in this series. Cause, you know, I mean, you just think about it right after game two, it's like, okay, well, now you have to win game three, you have to win game four, which are both, okay, maybe they're not coin flips, right? You're favored in those games, but it's not like, you know, it's not like you're like an 80% favorite to win either of those games, even at home. You know, you have to win both of those games. So probabilistically, that's obviously not, you know, that's, you know, you wouldn't say that the odds are that you're going to win both of those games, but, you know, you sort of have to just, again, it's the cliche, but you have to take it game by game. You have to win the first game, then you have to win the second game, and then you have to win one, you know, you have to win two out of three, including one on the road, which obviously is extremely difficult to do. And Phoenix has looked great at home. So I mean, the numbers don't surprise me at all. You know, do the Bucks have a 20% chance at winning the series? You know, I don't know, maybe something in that order. I think the good news for the Bucks is that certainly right now they look like they have the best player in the series. You know, they have complementary players who are at least capable of of being playing at a very high level. And at least, you know, I don't think we're all going to say that like we'd pick Jrue Holiday to be better than Chris Paul, or, you know, project for Chris Middleton to be better than Devin Booker game in and game out. But they at least are of the caliber that night to night, you know, you expect at least one of those guys to be very good. And if they're both playing even average, they can at least net out, you know, at least a fair bit of what those two Phoenix stars can do. Again, not that they're necessarily going to be better, but, you know, when you have Giannis, you don't need them necessarily to be, you know, lights out. So long story short, yeah, I mean, the odds are still long. But, you know, again, the Nets series obviously was a very different type of series, different type of opponent. You know, Kyrie obviously goes out in, I think it was game four. So that series was obviously just sort of different. But, you know, I think for the Bucks, it was all about sort of extending the series and, you know, trying to get Giannis back up to health and back up to a high minute load. I don't think any of us expected him to be at that point in game two already. And, you know, really being even, you know, I mean, he basically is at 105%, 110% of, you know, peak Giannis basically in games two and three. So, you know, unfortunately, they're probably going to need him to continue to play, maybe not at quite this level, but at a very high level. And then you're just going to need other guys to do stuff. And I mean, who knows, right? I mean, with this playoff series, you know, Chris Paul hurts his shoulder again. You know, if Jrue Holiday turns his ankle, I mean, again, I don't think any of us want this playoff series to be kind of thrown by something like that. But I mean, the way this year has gone, right? I mean, nothing would be surprising. And I think the longer this series goes, I mean, that's really what the Bucks have to do at this point, obviously, is just try to extend the series. And so, you know, we'll see. I mean, as I think for Bucks fans, you try to enjoy the next couple of days here because you just never know, you know, if game four, you can have the same, I don't want to say same luck, but, you know, obviously the same type of result, or, you know, if it does get close, as you said, I'm sure the Suns feel very comfortable with their ability to operate in a close game with their two guards relative to the Bucks guards. But, you know, again, all the Bucks can do is just, again, the old cliche, game by game, and try to extend the series. And then you hope that, you know, Phoenix, you hope that maybe Chris Paul stops shooting 70% on mid-range jump mid-range jumpers. I think he was 6 out of 8 on mid-range jumpers tonight. So that's still going on. But, you know, again, I think as a fan of the NBA, I think there's something pretty cool, too, about seeing some great performances by guys on both sides here night in and night out.
Let's talk a little bit about a not great performance. Devin Booker, 10 points, 3 of 14 shooting, 1 of 7 on three-pointers. I think the Bucks defense did a solid job on him. I also think he just kind of missed some shots he usually makes. What did you make of that? Are you have any confidence that the Bucks figured out how to bother him some, or are you expecting that to regress toward his higher levels in the rest of the series?
I don't think the Bucks have, like, you know, I think he's one of those guys that is just at, he's good enough that you know, you just try to bug him and hope that he loses his rhythm, or, you know, just doesn't have it, right? Which, you know, maybe different type of player than Chris Paul, but he's not the guy that you just say you're gonna shut down. But I mean, I think he came into this series shooting, I think, like 34% on threes in the playoffs. I think he shot, I mean, he's what, like a career 35% three-point shooter. And, you know, we were just discussing this on our podcast. I mean, if you go back and look at just his three-point shooting in the last, I don't know, since game, like after game one of the East Finals, the West Finals, when he has 40 and goes 3 of 7 from three. So I think the last 7 games, he's shot 14%, 58%, 13%, 14%, 67%, 0%, 14% from three. So he's been, you know, Bucks fans have had to deal with the erratic shooting of Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday. And I mean, nobody really talks about it. Nobody really talks about it, because I mean, I think Booker is definitely a better, you know, more consistent scorer than those guys. But his 3-point shooting is very kind of, you know, it comes and it goes, right? And I mean, again, he's one of those guys I've always said is, you know, on the all not as high a percentage 3-point shooter as you think team, with like Trae Young, and there's a few other guys like that you think of as these great shooters, but you look at the numbers and you're like, wow, they don't really shoot tons of threes, and they don't actually like hit as many threes as you think. And so I think what makes Booker great is obviously not that he's just, you know, this lights out 3-point shooter. It's that he is able to do score from everywhere, right? He's a 3-level scorer, can get to the line. And I think the main thing here, you know, last game, not letting him get to the foul line at all, you know, kind of got lost in the shuffle, but, you know, 31 points on 25 shots, you know, again, that's not like the end of the world from a defensive standpoint against him. And in game one, you know, 27 points on 21 shots. You know, again, it's good. It's a high baseline, you know, I think that he brings night to night. And I think that's the big difference is, generally, he brings kind of a little higher baseline than someone like Middleton, but Middleton's obviously also doesn't have a, you know, MVP superstar that he has to defer to as well. So I don't know. I mean, I think it was an interesting move by Monty tonight to bench him for much of the second half. I fully expect him to come out motivated. I don't think Devin Booker is afraid of the moment or any of those cliches. I'm fully expecting, you know, the 35 point comeback game from Devin Booker in game four. But again, I mean, he's not a, you know, 40% 3-point shooter at the end of the day, and he's able to be extremely hot night to night. But it's also, you know, been kind of his thing in these playoffs that he's been really erratic, especially from three game to game.
Devin Booker is a really good 3-point shooter. I think he's generally better than his 3-point percentage would suggest for a couple of reasons. One, in the half court, sometimes especially against a really good defense like the Bucks, there's going to be times the shot clock's winding down, somebody needs to create something. That's often Devin Booker. Before Chris Paul showed up, it was always Devin Booker. He also takes a disproportionate number of their end-of-quarter heaves, and those are pretty much always misses. So add a miss or two in a lot of games, especially in these playoffs, that I think weighs it down. But you're right, he has been in a cold stretch since that game one of the Western Conference Finals. You know, just throughout the inside and outside the arc, until getting to the finals, he warmed up a little bit. But no, you're right. You definitely can't count on him one way or the other. Somebody else you maybe can't count on. I'm curious now, down 2-1 in the finals, but in the NBA finals, What is your level of faith in Mike Budenholzer?
I mean, let me say this. I would say it's probably higher than it was at the beginning of the playoffs.
Wow.
You know, okay. I mean, it's kind of, this game was very strange, right? Because they leaned away. They went small pretty early, which I would not have wanted them to do. I think this is one of those series where you have to figure out how to basically play Brook Lopez pretty big minutes, I would guess. And look, Brook Lopez isn't going to play like 45 minutes. He's probably not going to ever, you know, I think he played 40 in that Nets game 7 overtime game. But for the most part, right, I mean, there's kind of limits to how much you can play Brook Lopez. But, you know, him playing 21 minutes tonight, granted some of that's, you know, the blowout nature of the game, but I don't think the Bucks can necessarily win the series playing Brook that few minutes. I think they, you know, a lot of that probably is also just with Ayton not playing a lot of minutes tonight. So a little bit of a weird night perhaps there, but I think they probably need to lean into kind of their size and figure out how to make that work. You know, I thought, and again, Chris Paul had a bunch of kind of tough shots tonight again. I thought the most encouraging thing that, you know, Seth Partnow tweeted out was, I think Bucks this game allowed after 17 corner threes in game 2, they allowed only 3 tonight, which to me was probably one of the more encouraging kind of, you know, random stats of this game. But again, you know, is there one way to slow down the Suns game to game? Like, you know, just like there's no sort of simple, like just do this and you'll slow down Giannis. There's clearly not just one way you can play and just reliably beat the Suns and Chris Paul and Devin Booker. So I don't know. I mean, I think Bud probably gets, there's almost like so much of a microscope on assuming and looking for things that he does wrong that at this point, like, he probably gets like a little bit more criticism than he probably deserves. But that said, it's like, you know, would I pick him over Monty Williams moving forward? No. I mean, I think, you know, I just worry with Bud, that again, he's just been a little bit slow at times. Well, a little bit and sometimes a lot bit slow to be proactive with stuff at times. You know, again, just you, it's also kind of hard to figure out too, because I think just some of the Bucks' limitations, like from a playmaking and decision-making standpoint, you know, how much of that is coaching versus how much of that is the fact that, you know, Jrue Holiday just is not a natural point guard, really, right? I mean, he's a combo guard. He can be a playmaker. I think he's had, you know, generally a pretty good playmaking playoffs. But when the defense throws different looks at him, or he has to make sort of split-second decisions, especially when you're comparing him to Chris Paul, because that's the guy he's going against, he's just not on that level, right? I mean, he's just not on that level in terms of his decision-making. And so I think, you know, you have Drew, Chris Middleton, obviously, very good playmaker for a wing, but, I mean, he's not, you know, an A-plus sort of creator for everybody either. And then obviously Giannis, right? I mean, Giannis obviously has his limitations as well. I mean, for a 6'11 guy, he's an incredible playmaker. But, you know, again, if you're comparing him to kind of the all-time greats, if you're trying to compare him to LeBron, obviously he's going to fall short there. So I think, again, there's some limitations of the Bucks' personnel and their ability to, for instance, like attack mismatches and things like that, which probably make Bud look worse than he is. But again, have the Bucks, you know, been perfectly coached and or even better coached than like the Suns? Like, I wouldn't say that so far, but again, you know, I do think it's interesting, right? Like there's absolutely kind of a honeymoon phase with Monty still, where it doesn't look like people really look to call him out on things that the Suns do that perhaps you wouldn't think make sense, right? Like if Bud was on the other side, he would be getting crucified for not doubling Giannis by kind of the random, you know, ESPN morning show people, right? But nobody really wants to do that with Monty, because I mean, Monty's a good coach, and you know, I don't think people necessarily take pleasure in doing that. But so I don't know. I think probably gets a harder look, but I think it's a really tough spot. I mean, you know, if as expected the Bucks don't win this series, you know, does Mike Budenholzer give you the absolute best chance of winning a championship over the next, you know, 2-3 years, which, you know, your window is probably getting worse rather than better given the age of the players on this team and the limitations from a roster building perspective. You know, this is probably the Bucks, I don't want to say last best chance, but probably their best chance that they're going to have. And is Mike Budenholzer, does he give you your best chance of winning as a coach? You know, while Rick Carlisle was available, I would have said, I'll take Rick Carlisle, you know, to take that challenge. You know, now not knowing kind of who's behind door number one, it's kind of harder to say. I think it's interesting, right? I mean, Bucks have two guys in Darvin Ham and Charles Lee that have been getting interviews, and you know, one of them may even get a job. For instance, like sound like the Washington job, one of them might get that even. So I think that's going to be an interesting thing. Taylor Jenkins from the staff obviously has done a nice job in Memphis. You know, would one of those other guys maybe be a better answer and be kind of a Nick Nurse type of improvement over Bud moving forward? Maybe, but you know, at this point, having made the finals, and you know, I imagine at this point, you know, Bud's, I would be shocked if he's not back next year, and he still would be a lame duck. So I imagine he gets some kind of extension too, which, you know, again, I
that's sigh.
Yeah, it's a sigh. It's a sigh type thing, right? Like, is that really the Bucks' best chance? I think there's got to be somebody who could give you a better chance, but at the end of the day, it's kind of hard because, you know, it's like, I hate to quote Mark Cuban, right? But, you know, it is true. Like, the grass might seem greener. I'm sure there's somebody out there that could probably be a fresh voice that could maximize really what the Bucks and build on what Budenholzer has established. But man, finding that guy is not easy, right? And I think especially for the Bucks, I mean, the culture that the Bucks have built, so much of that, you know, I think Budenholzer really deserves a lot of credit for doing that. Like, the legitimacy and the, again, the culture the Bucks have established and the winning culture, I don't think it's because of the front office or ownership that they've been able to establish a lot of that. You know, I think we need to give Bud and his staff a lot of credit. And, you know, if you just sort of suddenly go a different direction, you know, again, you're playing with fire. But again, philosophically, you know, it is obviously a situation where it's all about a championship. So if the Bucks lose, it's going to be interesting. I think I'm sure Bud will be back, but we'll have to see. You know, I know Bucks fans, I think that was sort of like the silver lining. Some people were saying, like, well, you know, going into game seven of the Nets, people were saying, like, well, you know, hey, if they lose, we'll get a new head coach. If they win, great. You know, they get to go to the East Finals. So kind of, I guess, just a peek inside sort of the challenge of I guess, being a Bucks fan, even with the team in the finals.
Well, I think Bud has done a great job overall with the Bucks, getting them to this level. I agree. He's probably not the best coach going forward. The problem is you don't know exactly who it is, like you said.
Yeah.
You get somebody else, you are raising your ceiling, you're lowering your floor, which might not be a bad thing. I think those Bucks fans who looked at it that way going into Game 7 against us, I think they were wrong. I think that was the wrong way to look at it. In that, I get it. I understand the criticisms of Bud, and I agree with a lot of them, but this is your chance. This team is so good. The window is open. This is your chance. And I think even right now, you put them at about 20% to win the title at this point. I think I'd go slightly higher. I was going 20-25%. I'll call it 22%. But we're basically in agreement about where they are right now, even while down 2-1 against this good Suns team. I think this is probably the Bucks' best chance. Doesn't mean it will be. I wouldn't be surprised one bit if they're back in the finals within the next couple of years and leading in the finals. That absolutely can happen too. But this is an older supporting cast. I really think that gets glossed over. Brook Lopez is so important to this team's identity. He's what, 33 now? You got Middleton, Drew Holiday around 30. PJ Tucker's even older than them. It's an older team around Giannis. Giannis's window is open. He's still learning. He's still growing. All these things we raved about him, he's still fairly raw for somebody this good. So many parts of his game that he can refine. The window is open. This is the chance, even down 2-1. So I think anything to root for is for anything that can help the Bucks win this year. There might not be a tomorrow with the supporting cast. Do you see Bucks fans really enjoying this run? Or is there a little bit of, like, how do you think they, let's just say they lose. Do you think this would be a disappointment? To me, it's like, wow, what a great year. First time in the finals for a long time. Like, no, it wasn't perfect. But to me, overall, this would be a positive season for the Bucks. How do you think fans there are taking that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think it depends a little bit on, you know, if they lose game four and then get closed out in game five, I think that, you know, that will paint a different sort of picture than if it, you know, goes seven and they, you know, lose a tough game seven on the road or something like that. I think the Giannis injury, because I know I'll say this because I certainly kind of fell into this camp. The Giannis injury, I've been referring to it as basically like the fan equivalent of like a near-death experience, right? Because, you know, I'm seeing flash in front of my eyes, not just the end of a chance to win a title in a year where, you know, the seas had seemingly parted for them to do so. But then, I mean, if he tears his ACL, next year is shot too, right? I mean, he's not coming back for the finals or something next year. You know, he's probably out all of next season as well. And as you said, you know, maybe that's okay from like a Giannis long-term career perspective. Like, he'll be back, and, you know, he's 26. So, okay, right? Like, it's not the end of the world, but that supporting cast. I mean, you know, Dan, you appreciate the cap aspect of this as well. I mean, I was kind of just playing around with some of the numbers. If they bring PJ Tucker back at something around his number and use the taxpayer mid-level and, you know, just fill out the roster, basically, I mean, they could be looking at a tax bill of like $45 million next year, right? And this is an ownership group that has not paid the tax so far. If they win the championship,
they got out of the tax this year unless they win. That's crazy.
Exactly. Which, you know, again, was kind of like, not that, I mean, it's interesting, right? Because the Torrey Craig move was really what got them out of the tax. And of course, that's ironic now, again, they're playing Torrey Craig and, you know, probably could use him on the roster just given some of the injuries. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a serious gut check, win or lose the championship. It's going to be a serious gut check of this ownership group, because they've said, look, we know we're going to be in the tax the next few years. That's why we're trying to avoid it, because we're trying to basically stave off, you know, starting the repeater. But okay, like, they're going to be in the tax next year, but I mean, unless they are like salary dumping Brooke Lopez and whatever else. Right. I mean,
why do they deserve the benefit of the doubt after the salary dumps they've done?
Well, but that's the question, right? I mean, to me, it's just like, you know, if you want to keep basically this version of the team and say, hey, we think we're good enough. We're right there. You're not just going to be in the tax. You're going to be like, you know, paying a tax bill of like $45 million, right? Which is roughly, I think, about like $20 million over, something on that order. And I mean, that's just a really interesting thing, right? Because it's one thing to pay, you know, whatever, like $10 million in tax because you're, you know, a few million over and something like that. But especially post-pandemic, are you willing to bite the bullet on that? Because I agree. I mean, you know, they haven't paid it yet. They avoided it this year. So, you know, they've always said, okay, we'll pay it. So I think absolutely it's going to be a really important, you know, check on them. And especially now that Giannis has already signed his long-term extension, you know, I mean, granted, if they don't bring guys back and it compromises their ability to compete, Giannis can obviously go to them and say, guys, this doesn't work for me. Right. And that would obviously be kind of the worst case scenario. But yeah, let's just say, I think Bucks fans should be watching obviously that very closely, because a guy like Tucker is really interesting, because, you know, they don't have bird rights on Portis, or, you know, Bryn Forbes obviously doesn't look too critical to bring back right now. But they don't have bird rights on those guys. So they can't, you know, obviously they can't really give those guys more than 120% or use the taxpayer mid-level on to bring them back. So PJ Tucker is the only guy kind of from the rotation that's a free agent that you can, you know, go really over to pay. And of course you can say, well, PJ Tucker's 36 years old, right? How much money are you going to give him? But I mean, even if just to have that salary slot from a trade perspective, you have to sign him for at least a, you know, 1 or 2 year deal, just so you can have some flexibility to make moves, if not to keep him and, you know, obviously just sort of run it back. So yeah, I mean, these are the things that nobody, you know, in Milwaukee is talking about. I think people, to get back to your original question, I think Bucks fans are really enjoying the ride. I think, especially in that second round, I think there was a lot more frustration just because of, you know, some of the coaching decision-making and the feeling that, you know, they were not taking advantage of some of the benefits they were getting with some of the Nets injuries. But since then, you know, I think it's been obviously a little bit smoother, in the fact that, you know, Giannis goes down and again, it felt like everything was sort of taken from you as a fan, to then have the team bounce back and, you know, Giannis turn out to be okay and to close out the Hawks in relatively convincing fashion in those last two games. You know, I mean, I think everybody's obviously seeing the scenes from, you know, downtown Milwaukee. I think the fans are kind of living it up and embracing this and enjoying it for everything it is. So, you know, again, and I think that's the way you have to do it, right? Because, I mean, game four, you lose, the series is pretty much over. So you might as well enjoy it for what it is. And as far as how it'll be viewed, you know, long-term, if they lose, it's a great question. I think, I think it kind of depends who you're talking about. You know, I think certainly Giannis is looking like someone who, if he can be anything close to this the rest of the series, I think obviously will have earned a degree of credibility, you know, around the league, and not that he needed it more with Bucks fans. But certainly he's answering a lot of questions that people may have had about him. And but we'll see, right? I mean, you know, I think Chris Middleton, there's always been a subset of Bucks fans that have been critical of Middleton. And I think part of that's just the familiarity factor. Jrue Holiday, I think, had a lot more of a benefit of the doubt. So him having his struggles, I think, is interesting. And if obviously they lose and he's part of that because he just, you know, can't shoot the rest of the series, it'll be interesting to see kind of how you know, Bucks fans perceive him. But, you know, as you said, I mean, if they bring back the same version of the team, I think they will certainly have a chance. And if Giannis can kind of, you know, continue to unlock additional parts of his game, obviously that sort of changes the calculus as well. And again, not to compare him to LeBron, but, you know, you feel a little bit better that, hey, maybe he can just be so good in the playoffs that he can cover up some of the Bucks' weaknesses otherwise. But again, if Brooklyn can ever get healthy, right, they're kind of that juggernaut you worry about. And obviously there's other teams that can come and be competitive as well moving forward. But yeah, I think if you're a Bucks fan, you just have to enjoy this for what it is and just pray that, you know, that the perhaps long shot odds that you figure out a way to do it. You know, they've at least done it once before. They've been a resilient team this year. So I think it's better. I think they have a better odds than a typical team, you know, in that position, but it's still a bit of a, maybe not a mountain, but it's definitely a hill to climb.
You are so much more bullish on the Bucks' odds of paying the luxury tax next season than I am. I know it sounds drastic, but hey, maybe you have to dump Brook Lopez or dump somebody. Just the history of this ownership, right? Giving up a first round pick to get rid of Henson and Dele. I know George Hill came back, and that was part of it. But part of giving up the pick was to unload those salaries. I'm sure you're so tired of talking about Malcolm Brogdon going. And everybody in Milwaukee is, but that was a big deal. Not only did they let Malcolm Brogdon go, which I thought was maybe defensible based on the return, in a year, you're a championship contender. Not to use that first round pick coming back from Indiana to upgrade the roster, which would have added salary. They didn't want to do that. I don't know. The one thing I wonder, if Giannis had not signed the Supermax extension, do you think the Bucks would be in the tax this year? Because they reportedly, ownership promised Giannis, now they're willing to pay the tax, and then they got him to sign. And once he's already signed, oh, we got out of the tax. Like, I wonder how good this team could be if the Bucks were willing to pay the tax. Obviously, they've built a very strong team, a finals team. But if they were willing to pay more, if that were a priority, how much better could this team be? Look at P.J. Tucker going to free agency next year. It's going to be the same question next year. At his age, is P.J. Tucker going to be worth the salary he can command? Maybe not. But you'd rather have P.J. Tucker than not, right? You're not going to be able to replace him with somebody else. You're going to have the exact same tools pretty much to go get another player, whether he leaves or stays. You can get another player with a mid-level exception too, right? You can build out your depth. That's not the route this team has gone. And so I don't know. I think the question of how much tax they're willing to spend is a little bit jumping the gun. For the Bucks' sake, I kind of hope that's the question, because that's beyond what I'm expecting, where it might just be, are we going to pay the tax at all?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, this year with all the Jrue Holiday unlikely bonus stuff, like, they were in a weird spot where they were up against the hard cap without, they couldn't really even go very high over the cap because of the hard cap issues with Drew's contract. So they were in kind of that weird spot where it was like, basically, like, well, I mean, pretty much keeping Torrey Craig was like the big swing move between being over or under the tax. Like, there wasn't like it's not like next year where it's going to be like, you're going to have to get rid of Brook Lopez and, you know, not bring back PJ Tucker to have any chance of being under the tax, right? Like, this year it's like you sold Torrey Craig for cash, which, especially when you're getting Tucker and you still had Dante DiVincenzo, and Tucker and Craig, you know, just hadn't broken through and been any type of factor for the Bucks, it, you know, didn't really feel like a big difference. So,
well, I mean, it's Craig and how the PJ Tucker trade was structured. Maybe there's a way where if you're willing to pay a little bit of tax, you could have handled that a little bit better asset wise, pick wise. Depending, you know, I don't know exactly what was available there, but it worked out perfectly, of course, that this got them under the tax. I have to imagine that was one of the goals, and maybe a goal that didn't have to be met.
Yeah, because I mean, this next year, right? Like, even if let's not include Brook Lopez, but let's include nine guys basically plus the dead salary they have. I think you're at around like 126 million without Brook Lopez's 13 million. You know, so you're including Connaughton, DiVincenzo, and then Nora, Merrill, Diakite, Elijah Bryant, right? Who are just minimum guys anyway. You know, basically you've got nine guys for $126 million, right? So if the tax is whatever, like 136 or whatever the projection is supposed to be, you know, you'd have to basically say, like, okay, well, with a straight face, you'd have to say, okay, well, we're going to fill out basically four or five guys on the roster for $10 million and get rid of Brook Lopez and for nothing and not re-sign PJ Tucker. And granted, I get the skepticism. To me, the Brogdon, letting Brogdon go was like, that was the very brazen, you know, move to avoid the tax. I think, you know, selling off Torrey Craig or doing some stuff around the margins to avoid the tax this year, like, I honestly don't see that as like anywhere even in the ballpark of like the Brogdon move as far as like ducking the tax. Like, ducking the tax this year, like, to me, is just like, well, pretty much any team would try to duck the tax if you're that close. And again, with the hard cap stuff, like, they couldn't even really get far over the tax anyway. I think next year's just such a different type of situation. Like, you have to just so dramatically, you know, change your roster construction to avoid the tax. It, you know, it's going to be inescapable, right? If they dump Brook Lopez for nothing or whatever, I mean, there's going to be no, it will be inescapable. And again, like, you know, you're 100% right. This ownership group has not paid the tax before. So I just don't see how they can face the fans with a straight face, especially coming off of a finals run. If you do those things to contort this roster into a non-tax paying roster. But again, I mean, that's going to be such an interesting part of this postseason, because you know, I can already picture it. Like, if Bobby Portis signs for whatever, even the taxpayer mid-levels exception, you know, Bucks fans are, there's going to be a subsection of people saying like, oh, they didn't bring back Bobby Portis. It's like, just wait, right? That's not even the big one. And that one, to be honest, I think there's a good case for going a different direction, right? Just thinking about, you know, having to find guys that are 16 game types of players, which, you know, so far Bobby Portis has not been a 16 game player, although he's been better than I expected in you know, especially in the last two series. But anyway, yeah, it's a very interesting summer. Your Bucks here, stuff will be very interesting when you do mock off-season stuff with Nate, Danny, and company.
Well, before we get into the next summer, I'm just looking forward to enjoying the rest of these series. These are two excellent teams. I think with Giannis playing like this, looking healthy, it's a series again. I'm so excited to watch the rest of this. I've enjoyed talking to you about where this series stands, about where the Bucks are going forward. You can follow Frank on Twitter at FMaddenNBA. I'm on Twitter at DanFeldmanNBA. Frank, thanks for coming on.
No problem, man. It's like we were saying, right? It's a time when Bucks fans have to appreciate kind of what's happening, and I guess Bucks podcasters as well have to take advantage of some of the extra energy and juice that we have to talk about Bucks while we can. So hopefully it'll be a really good series, as you were saying. But again, you never know, game to game. I think this is a at least this is shaping up, I think, as a series where it feels like we're going to get a champion that hopefully, you know, deserves it and looks like the quote unquote worthy NBA champion, which I know there's been some stress about that, obviously, throughout these playoffs with some of the injuries. But obviously, I think both these teams have looked impressive in the wins. And now it's on the Bucks to get a win on next game. Otherwise, it's going to be a pretty short series.
Oh, for sure. I couldn't say this after the first two games, but now we can. Bucks here.
There we go. They showed up.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.